Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. Bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens. Brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Said, "Daddy, do you want to dance?" And he said, "Maggie, I'd love to." Oh, do you know what's... All right, so I totally forgot. Hi, everybody. By the way, it's My Favorite Things. Hi. So I totally forgot something I was supposed to say on the last thing. A couple episodes
about
ago.
About Every Little Step?
Yes. One of my favorite sequences is when they have all of the ladies who are auditioning at the ballet. And it is so difficult. It is a difficult note for a legitimately trained only singer who doesn't dance and can move. Can sing, but you have these dancers singing it that they've got to have a killer voice. So they splice together all of the people trying to hit the note, but like one long succession. It is so funny.
Is it like what those people do now with like the,
yes on YouTube yeah, where they give like last 5 years where she's like James, you know, and I, you know, like the most dramatic part of the song, and you hear they
give
just
me Fat Boy's famous arrow.
Yes. Such a good one. I love those things. I mean, that's like really nerdy, like musical
theater.
Who's
doing them? We love
whoever you are. Thank you for your time and dedication to the happiness that is musical theater and the doing all that research.
And I'm going to make a suggestion. If I can have a clip of Curtis Was Supposed to Love Me.
Yes.
Would be great.
That would be awesome.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my favorites.
That's a really good one. Now, all I'm doing is trying to think of like really dramatic moments that we could string together from popular shows.
Well, I mean, I think that's like the big one.
That's a really good one.
Or anyone, come visit your good friend Sweeney.
Alas, my right arm is complete again.
Oh, that's alas, my really right arm is
right?
complete again.
Because it's the first time he gets to speak. The climax of the song.
I love that in a musical when they speak the climax. But before we went on air, we were talking about, I don't know if anyone else remembers this. I don't know if this is a myth or it's not, but you think it happened, which is that when A Chorus Line was revived on Broadway, it was supposed to not look at all like the original. I kept hearing that they were going to do like holograms and film and like you were going to see the memories.
I don't know if that's true, but that's what I heard.
And
I just remember that, and I recall that. But it makes me think of productions like A Chorus Line that were so iconic, ran for so long.
Yeah.
Cats, let's say Cats as well. Let's put this in. These shows that were the direct, they are so intertwined that when you revive it, you do the original. You have to get, even with this revival of A Chorus Line, they literally had, even like on the Chorus Line, their body language had to be replicated.
Yeah.
So Rent, I'm thinking of shows that have always, when they redo it. So here's my challenge is I want to see a version that can reinvent it again.
A Chorus
with
Line.
Or like something like A Chorus Line. I would love to see a reinvented version. I don't know if it's possible because it is about Michael Bennett, his choreography. They're so intertwined. How can you remove that and recreate it? Also, that music was literally written for him. And it's when we talk to choreographers, the challenge that they have when they're reinventing choreography because it's like trying on someone else's clothes. Like the music was written for that choreography. So to invent something new to add to that music is very difficult.
Yeah, that's tough.
Because the music was, it's so, and with Bennett and Hamlet, and all of that. I mean, they were like, come on.
I mean, I think there was a production up in Canada recently where it was done in The Round or in Thrust or something.
I think an ex of mine was in that. Yeah.
I don't know how you, I don't, my feeling is if you're going to, I'm okay if you want to do something new, but it has to be better than what was just out there.
Right. Don't just reinvent it just to reinvent
Don't reinvent just to reinvent. Like,
I hear that. But then I don't want to stifle someone taking a chance and, you know, risking being different, but then do it for a reason.
Yeah, but as long as the reason is I don't want it to look like what it looked like before.
Right.
That's not a good reason.
Right. Indeed.
And then that doesn't work.
Mm. Happy Thursday.
Oh, yes, Happy Thursday. I was thinking of other shows that had that same syndrome. Or no, like Hello, Dolly. Like, it works. Like, Gower Champion's right. choreography works.
So we don't need, like, a black dress and an Irish accent, is what you're saying.
I know what you're referencing, sir. And that's shady.
That was a little shade. I shouldn't have done that. I've been watching too much RuPaul's Drag Race.
Well, you know what? Because I wanted to talk to you about certain things, so we have more of a bond between each other, I watched the first episode of the first season.
I'm so proud of you. Now we're, like, into episode, like, 4 or 5. So good, right?
Yeah. I saw there's a woman named Miss Cracker.
Yeah.
And this is a spoiler alert if you haven't seen it, but Vanjie was let go on the first episode and had the best exit I've ever seen.
She did good.
She literally looked at the camera and said, Miss Vanjie, Miss Vanjie, Miss Vanjie, without blinking, and then just disappeared in the mist.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I would have been like, bye, guys.
No. The exit's part of it. You have to like have an
really.
Exit.
It's a big. That's a big thing.
If you can have your dignity still as you sashay away.
Can I tell you that's one of my pet peeves in a musical?
What
is when the director has given somebody a star exit?
There's what's a star exit?
Oh, you know, where like they.
I never thought of it. And honestly, you're the director. I've never thought of this before.
You know, where a character says something and is supposed to just leave, and
but they like leave dramatically up the staircase, and it's like
they do something like. Yeah, they do either a big dramatic entrance or they do something really weird when they exit the stage.
And then go.
And the audience is like, yes!
Right.
Like,
I have to clap now.
Like, let's move on with the play. I also hate slow exits.
Mm.
Like
milking
a character.
It, just milking it.
Stop milking. We're not on Old McDonald's farm. E-I-E-I eternity. That's what I have to say.
E-I-E-I go!
That's better. You've been good.
You're welcome. I yes handed you.
Bad. Better is better.
Better is better. Love. I actually love that score. I know we're going all over the place.
What, Seesaw?
No, a chorus line. I mean, a class act. Oh. Oops. I've been rich. I've been poor. Poor is better.
I've been fire. I've been ice. I've been naughty. I've been nice.
Edward
Cleven. I've been naughty once or twice. Twice is better.
You
and I is better.
Oh.
Think and you'll agree.
Dun, 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 dun.
Better. No. I love that so much. Sorry, I was just thinking about it.
Right, though?
I was first introduced to it in Phyllis Newman's The Mad Woman of Central Park West.
Which you can watch on YouTube.
Yes, we did a favorite thing, didn't we?
Did we? Yes, we did. And I still am a little disturbed by it.
Why?
Couple things. All right. The daughter's like, Mom, pay attention to me. Pay attention to me. Pay attention to me. Mom, get out of my bedroom. I want to stay here all day and sing songs and not face the world. Go. Which is, I'm sure, a very real thing for someone who has a certain amount of money and lives in a bedroom on the Upper West Side.
But this is something we talk about with our therapist.
Yeah, I'm okay. Like, and then it feels a little bit like a vanity project. Like, it was a little bit like, wait, what theater can I get? All right, I'll do it. Let's do it.
I don't want to pay $40 at West Side Arts to watch you. I'm sorry. Because although I do like, we talked about it because remember she did that horrible cheerleading number.
So I guess we don't have to talk about it right now. We can just go back to that other episode.
Yeah, go back to the other episode.
We don't need to relive this right now. You're welcome, everybody. Sorry about that.
But I do like when she sings Don't Laugh.
Yes. Actually, I love that.
I think that's
Isn't
a good
that a Sondheim song?
It is. He wrote it for Hotspot.
Right, right, right. And Vicky Clark does a great version of that in one of the concerts as well.
Yeah. If I can convince... Don't laugh. I do it every morning in the shower. Why can't I do it now? Show me a glass of water. I'll show you a soggy dress. Show me a tube of toothpaste. I'll show you a mess. Show me a fresh laid sidewalk. I'll show you where my footprints are. Show me a fire hydrant. I'll show you my car. Show me 100 lighters. I'll show you the one that won't. Show me the train to Boston. Oh shit, I fucked it up already.
Oh.
I'll show you St. Paul.
Thank you, Rob.
Show me.
No, it was really good. I thought that was nice.
Thank you. Sorry.
No, sorry.
I used to know all the words.
I didn't know you loved that song so much that you knew all the words.
I get nervous sometimes.
It's okay. It was really good, though.
Thank you.
The first three verses. That was nice. Sorry, Rob's doing his email right now. So
No. How dare you? I hate you.
So what's your favorite thing today?
Well, now, hold on. I'm trying to check a lyric because now I'm angry.
Oh, now you really want it. You're going to pull it up and sing the rest of it?
Well, no, I'm not going to sing the rest of it. I'm just looking at the lyric to figure out what I did wrong. Oh, show me the latest dance step.
Yep.
I'll show you the latest fall. And I'm not even looking. I'll show me the train to Boston. I'll show you St. Paul. Show me 100 lighters. I'll show you the one that won't. Show me a priceless vase. No, don't. See, that's called acting.
No, man, I told you he was going to do it anyway, you guys.
And then he comes back to it, which is so great. Show me a broken window. I'll show you a bat and ball. Show me the boat to Europe. I'll show you St. Paul. It's a joke. She's always going back to St. Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, never mind. My favorite thing. How dare you? Why would you even ask me what my favorite thing is? Can't you see I'm working?
We have this 20 minutes to kill.
Can't you see I'm singing here? Can't you see I'm leaving? What if I said to you, Kevin, I'm doing the Mad Woman of Central Park West?
I'm like, and this is it? The podcast?
And
is
I'm
it?
And I'm no, but I'm playing Phyllis Newman. What if I recreated the whole set and I literally showed up as Phyllis Newman?
Can I be the daughter on the other end of the door that's always knocking on the door?
You mean the character who never appears?
Yes.
So you can stay home so you don't have to watch me?
Yep.
Okay. Well, you've made a choice today. What is my favorite thing? Oh, my gosh. I knew nothing about this person. I am so fascinated. This favorite thing is actually a suggestion from one of our guests,
ooh,
Erica, who is known on Instagram as the Lady Groucho.
One of our listeners.
Yeah. What did I say? One of our guests. Oh, sorry. I'm sorry.
And
one
I
of our listeners.
I just couldn't remember which Erica we'd...
Sorry.
There's been 100, so
my apologies,
no.
Erica. One of our listeners, Erica, suggested this to me.
Awesome.
And I was like, okay, it's a documentary, and I watched it. I'm like, I had no idea about this person. So this is all new to me.
Cool. I'm excited.
This is all very new to me.
Aww.
It's a song I'm writing on the spot.
Oh. I thought this was a little carnival. No?
What is that song?
I don't know. It's a real nice... Da, da, da,
no, Carnival has one of my favorite songs. Carnival makes me sad that I can't sing. Because I would love to do her face.
Oh, yeah.
That would take...
There it is.
Two other hands.
Goulet has to have done it at some point.
Not mine. Well, he just did it. That would take dos manos.
Why is this Spanish? Why does he always go to... Why do you always have him going to Spanish?
Well, I do really well in Tijuana. I like to have my listeners feel like they're included. Escúchame. Means listen to me. No más agua. La boca es el perfecto. That means I don't need any more water. My mouth's perfect. So you can ask Carol Lawrence about that.
Thank you, Robert.
Oh, hey, Kyle, a pleasure.
Wait, I'm on the edge of my seat.
Okay, so have you ever heard of a gentleman by the name of Wakefield Pool?
Never in my life.
Neither had I.
Wakefield Pool.
That's his
name. Like P-O-O-L-E?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Wakefield Pool, P-O-O-L-E. The documentary, and Erica, thank you so much for recommending this because I watched it as soon as you recommended it, and I'm fascinated. The documentary is called I Always Said Yes, The Many Lives of Wakefield Pool.
The Many Lives?
Yeah, it's a documentary from 2013. Let me tell you who Wakefield Pool, what he's known for, and then I'll tell you why we're talking about it today. Wakefield Pool was known for being the first person to produce gay pornography in a commercial environment. So he made a film called Boys in the Sand. Get it?
Got it. Sounds messy, but got it.
Yeah. Sorry. And another one called Bijou, and then another one called The Bible.
Bible.
Yeah,
are you reading IMDb right now? Yeah.
No. I'm just telling you.
No, I know. I have adult gay film. It's called The Bible.
The Bible. Well, yeah. No, that one was heterosexual.
Adam and Eve.
It branched out.
Not religious at all. Gotcha.
Yeah, not religious at all. You know, just inspired by. As a gay man, I didn't know anything about him, which I felt bad about because he created such an important part of our history. What it did was it legitimized gay sex on screen and the fact that two men could be intimate with each other the same way that like Deep Throat did and the same way that...
What era are we talking
the
about?
The 70s.
Thank you.
The early 70s. Right. So we're
ostensibly our straight porn already existed. Well, I mean, porn has always existed, but...
Yeah, but there's an idea in the history of pornography, cinematic pornography, between... I play it at a stag party and nobody else sees it and we can't talk about it, to actually making it an event that everybody goes to see. Like it's you know
in
what
a movie
I mean?
Theater. When 42nd Street, that row, you could go to see movies.
And it would be and it's fine for people to go. So it's more acceptable. And right. So that's things like the pornographic movie Deep Throat,
yes.
The Devil and Miss Jones, right. Like all of that stuff, which is what people went to, like, I don't want to say it's a family outing.
But there was like an artistic element to it, could you say? I don't want to say high art, obviously. But
yeah,
there was...
It is artsy.
I know that there is websites that actually... That's not about the sex side of it and getting off, but it's about like how they were made. And like literally there's appreciation for the art of it.
Yes, absolutely. You're absolutely correct. And so Boys in the Sand does that, but for the gay community. So heterosexual couples are going to go see this and... enjoy themselves as a movie going experience, not as something sexual.
Right.
So anyway, why are we talking about him and why are we talking about this? Because half the movie is that part, the latter half, which is his life changing the pornographic industry for the gay community. The other half before that is he was a Broadway dancer, was the choreographer of Do I Hear a Waltz, and assistant to Joe Layton, and the video supervisor on Bring Back Birdie. That's what the first half of the movie discusses.
Oh my gosh.
Now I'm going to be honest with you. As a documentary, as an objective observer, I'm like, there's so much talk about Broadway that doesn't really fuel his...
The rest, yeah.
But for me...
I'm like, hey,
amazing.
We got a documentary... Wait, what?
So,
what's it called again?
It's called I Always Said Yes, The Many Lives of Wakefield Pool. So he started off as a dancer in the Ballet Russe, but then he did the revival of Finian's Rainbow. He was in the ensemble of Tenderloin, the unsinkable Molly Brown. He was in the ensemble of No Strings. Richard Rodgers liked him so much that he directed and choreographed the West End premiere of No Strings. Then Richard Rodgers, he did The Girl Who Came to Supper. Now, this is where it gets interesting. And he wanted to become a choreographer and director. And so Richard Rodgers was like, great, come back and you can choreograph Do I Hear a Waltz? And the director, John Dexter, was like, no, I direct and choreograph, even though he'd never done really a musical. He's like, I will direct and choreograph. And they made up a new title for this guy, and it was Choreographic Associate. But he really choreographed.
So
a lot of the film though shows great footage from the in color of the original Do I Hear a Waltz. Then Joe Layden hired him, and he was his assistant on George M. and Dear World. But then, now wait a minute, this gets really cool.
We're now in the 70s. Yeah,
he's looking for a job. So guess where he gets hired? Triton Gallery. And he becomes real. Now you're gonna love this story. He became really friendly with David Byrd, the great graphic designer who gave us that brilliant poster of Follies with the woman looking out and the crack in her face. Now, wait a minute. Wakefield Pool is responsible for that poster. They were looking for someone to do the poster. They said to David Byrd, submit three items to us. He did three sketches. Wakefield Pool looked at them like, this is the most brilliant thing I've ever seen in my life. This poster perfectly encapsulates the show. Wakefield Pool is hired to teach all the old women in the show how to dance. So he does tap dancing classes once a day for these old women. And one day Hal Prince walks in and Wakefield pulls the style prince. He goes, hey, wait a minute. He goes, my friend David submitted posters to you. He goes, those posters were the best posters I ever saw. Why did you not accept them? And Hal Prince was like, I never saw them. He's like, can David bring me the posters today? So Wakefield Pool called his friend. David Byrd rushed over, and that's why we have the Follies poster.
Wow.
Because if it wasn't for Wakefield Pool.
Look at these many lives.
So that's a thing. And then he does the movies, Boys in the Sand and Bijou and all that stuff.
Did they talk about how we got into that?
The pornography?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like your Broadway career is going up and all of a sudden you're like...
It was going down for him because he was like, I'm never... What he realized was that he wasn't really going to spark as a dancer.
Oh, he was never going to get his...
And when he was working over... That's actually a really great story. Hold on. I'll give you... Hold on one second on a chorus line. I'm putting a pin in that. Wakefield Pool was doing these multimedia slideshows at Trident Gallery, like of David Byrd's work and other poster designers' work. And one day Sondheim came and was like, Wakefield, I didn't know you had this in you. And he was like, oh my God, I realize I'm a visual artist. Mm-hmm. I'm not a theater actor. I'm a visual mm-hmm. artist. And it was because Sondheim said, great work. The Chorus Line story. Michael Bennett, the producer of Boys in the Sand, was this businessman. Boys in the Sand made so much money that the guy was actually making more money as the producer of Boys in the Sand than he was in his normal business. Mm-hmm. His neighbor was Michael Bennett. And Michael Bennett's like, I'm broke. He's like, I've got no money. He's like, I need something to hold me over. And he's like, and I'm doing this recording session. I need money to rent a studio.
Wait.
Michael Bennett was really broke before A Chorus Line.
Yes.
So this guy who produced Boys in the Sand
yes.
with his excess money
yes.
gave it to Michael Bennett.
Thank you.
And okay. that helped create A Chorus Line. And when A Chorus Line was a huge success, Michael Bennett gave the guy all the money back. But the guy was like, if it wasn't for Boys in the Sand, there would have been no money to give Michael Bennett and there wouldn't have been A Chorus Line.
And they talk about that in yeah. the documentary. Oh, my God.
And then the 80s hits and the drug craze happens. And he talks a lot about Bring Back Birdie, because if you remember, Bring Back Birdie was all about those video screens. Remember those television screens?
Yes, the whole back wall, yes.
And Wakefield Pool did all of the...
So he was working in the porn world and still doing Broadway stuff.
No, he was only doing it because Joe Layden asked him to.
So he came back to
Because Joe Layden was like, hey, don't you do film now? Then that flopped. And he became very addicted to drugs, and got into rehab, and everything is great now.
He's still with us?
He's still with us. He's still alive. We should talk to him.
Oh my gosh!
But the documentary interviews David Byrd, and it interviews the owners of the Trident Gallery, and it interviews Mary Rogers. It's really fantastic, and I'm so happy Erica recommended it. Like I said,
I cannot wait. Where'd you watch it?
I think I watched it on Hulu. Or Amazon Prime.
Okay.
The Many Lives of Wakefield Pool. And like I said, there's great footage in there. It's not something, just so you're aware, they show clips from...
I'm not going to watch this with my mom and dad.
I don't think so.
Yeah. No, I'm not. I'm saying that as a fact. I'm not going
to
watch this.
But also, you know what? Not to be an asshole. You see nudity. I mean, you just see nudity. You don't see any sex acts.
Gotcha.
And it's beautiful. He actually did a beautiful job photographing human bodies. Mm-hmm. So it's not.
Sure.
I'm just
nothing
warning.
To be ashamed of.
It's not like don't put this on in your classroom and be like, we're going to learn about Broadway today, because you're going to see. Things that you probably shouldn't be seeing.
Yes, I. Okay.
That's all.
I want to see it for all that footage and just.
Oh my god!
To know all the characters he's associated with and yet never know him. It's a crime, and so it's.
And like I said, as a gay man, I feel guilty because I'm like, I should have known about him for what he contributed, and then as a theater artist, I feel like I've learned about somebody I never knew about.
Yeah.
But yes, I believe he is still alive. He is still with us.
Wow.
Wakefield Pool, the movie is called I Always Said Yes.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
And
awesome.
Kevin is going to tell us his favorite thing.
My favorite thing I feel like I've done a lot of these, but I can't help it. I've been on a kick. Another little documentary, but this is a YouTube documentary. And I've talked about this a lot. I think every student and lover of musical theater who wants to understand how a writer writes and how that relates to the actor and what the actor's responsibility is in interpreting that material and how to interpret that material. And I think the reason why this is anybody can watch this now is because what this documentary is about the writers of a certain piece about this certain piece. And what's really cool is that this piece has since been made a movie. So everyone knows this musical in our country now, or at least almost every young person does when they might not have known it. And there's many ways that you can see this musical, but the writers talk about how they made it, why they made the decisions they made, and how the advice they're giving to young people and other actors, just professionals as well. And in fact, this was made by the licensing company, which is MTI. MTI put this out in the 80s. In the 80s, was made.
My mind is, I have no idea what this is.
I'm sure you do. It's a conversation piece is how they bill it. It's a 50-minute little documentary.
Is it with Sondheim?
Yes. Yes, it is. And James Lapine.
Oh, for Into the Woods?
Into the Woods. It's the Into the Woods. I don't even know what to call it because it was not commercially released.
It's like a study guide, right?
It is. Basically, when MTA first released the rights and they licensed their thing, I think they included this as like a study guide. I'm sure it was originally a VHS cassette tape. You would watch that and that would help inform you with your community theater production of Into the Woods. I think the idea is that this stuff is so, it's Sondheim and it's not like, you know, jazz hands and that's it. There's a lot of depth to this and that... what's interesting to me is that this is a time when theater is transitioning a little bit more into our... Now we have Dear Evan Hansen, Come From Away, Band's Visit, where the music and the drama are so laced together. Mm. But that was a little new for actors for actors to have to interpret that much information and that much layers. That the literally Sondheim's on saying, I am acting out the characters when I'm writing this stuff. And he says that in other interviews, but to hear it in this version of it... is very special because it is specifically about Into the Woods. And they section off, this 40 minutes is sectioned off by pieces and pieces. But a couple of things. But first of all, what you have to appreciate is that these guys, how they got Sondheim and Lapine to do this. But it starts, so it's Into the Woods, a conversation piece, B-roll footage of Sondheim and James Lapine walking out of a forest together. Like literally, I'm serious, as the credits are rolling up, it's Sondheim and Lapine just kind of taking a little stroll in the woods together.
Are they holding hands?
Because they're going out of
baskets?
Basically. I mean, like, and then the closing credits are them walking back into the woods. So it's like they came out of the
what
woods.
What are they, fucking Brigadoon?
They come out of the woods to share this information, and then they go back in. But that's the only little funny, cheesy part. The rest of it is straight up, it's like a very interesting lecture. In that it's dense information, but it is fascinating and important to understand and hear. And hear the master themselves
talk
about it.
And this is on YouTube.
This is on YouTube. I don't think it's a legal thing because I don't think you can buy this thing. I think it's just, it's educational. And yet it is done in, Sondheim is literally sitting at the piano and he talks about the themes of the songs. So the way that they separate it by music themes and characters. So then Sondheim will talk about, he even says like, watch the tempo markings here. I mean, it's all the things that I talk about in my music theory class where you have to observe what a composer wrote in the score. You can't just listen to the cast album and sing a song. That's not how we interpret music. We have to go back to what Sondheim intended and what the character intends and how he has reflected that in the score. So he literally confirms all of that. He says, watch the tempo markings, watch the dynamics. You know, if I did this softer, I did it for a reason. You don't just sing it softer to sing it softer. So then they have character types and how they play. Character tips. Sorry, I can't read my own handwriting. So James Lapine will be in his little grandfather chair and his reading chair talking about the characters and how they came up with all these characters for this production. They have song tips. So Sondheim will go through Agony and he'll talk about why he wrote it a certain way how it's a competitive song and how that the princes are trying to one-up each other and how that's reflected in the swaying of the music and all of that. He basically shows the function of everything, that if nothing is arbitrary. They go on to talk about the sets and costumes and how they came up, you know, why they chose that information, what you can do with your production. He talks about directorial tips, James Lapine does. So it goes back and forth with Sondheim by himself at the piano and then Lapine by himself. And then a couple times they'll show B-roll footage of them just hanging out. It's very funny, the B-roll footage. Oh, and then the last message, I just love this, is just Sondheim saying, you know, and he's very confident because at this time he knows, he's written all these shows, he knows how great he is. But he says, you know, no matter what happens, he's like, it's not about the singing, it's not about hitting that note, it's not about getting the right dance step. He's like, the only thing that matters is the intention of the scene. And I just think it's, I don't know, it's refreshing to hear, even though we know that and we know that's what it's supposed to be, but to hear him say why they wrote it, how they wrote it, what it all means and how he came up with all that. Even so much as like the da-da, like that, you know, when it starts like, I wish, da-da, and he's like, that's supposed to wake you up. It's supposed to jolt you awake. Like it's a, here's a story we're going to tell. So anyway, I'm a, for those Sondheim fans and those who don't get Sondheim, even more important, this is for you because this is how you will appreciate, even if you do not like Sondheim, you will appreciate why the people who do love him so much because he does inflect everything in there. And I like it because you get to, he's an older gentleman now and we don't get to see him that much, but you really get to know him a little bit because he let's face it, we've asked him and I told you, he responded and said, guys, no, I'm too old. I'm not doing any more interviews like this. I've already said everything. Well, if you want to see the things that we wanted to talk to him about, this is it right here. And you get a younger, very more outgoing Sondheim. And so you get to know him a little bit.
That's so cool. Yeah, so I know they exist, but I've never seen one.
It's an easy watch. It is a fun watch. Oh, and there's lots of B-roll. They show lots of clips from the stage. Oh. I mean, even though we have that video of it, the PBS, but it's great. So this is called Into the Woods, MTI Conversation Piece.
I've seen the one he did for MTI of Pacific Overtures Jr.
Mm-hmm. Stop it. You ass.
Because, you know, that's a big popular one at the high schools.
The junior one, yeah.
Right next to Anyone Can Whistle Junior.
God.
All right, little Marty, take it again.
Everybody says don't. Everybody says don't.
No, Marty. Louder. Louder, Marty. I can't hear you.
I have to go to soccer practice.
I wish they did that at Anyone Can Whistle Junior. Okay, so mine was, I always said yes, I always say yes.
No, Rob. No, not how you are on Friday nights.
Oh, the shade of it all.
There's no shade.
Miss Vanjie.
Mine is, I always said yes, the many lives of Wakefield Pool. Kevin's?
The MTI conversation piece on Into the Woods on YouTube.
Amazing. And a big thanks to Erica for recommending that.
Thanks, Erica. I can't wait to watch that documentary.
Yes. Take care.
Bye.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. Bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens. Brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things. These are a few of my favorite things.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.